Hello, Mark.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm a little bit tired. I went out yesterday, but...
You went for a barbecue day.
I did go for a barbecue.
You came home last night, not as late as I anticipated, and told me all about the barbecue you had eaten.
Oh, did I?
Yes, you did.
Oh, dear.
Do you want to tell our listeners what you found yourself singing when you were at the barbecue full of adult males having an adult male sort of time? That doesn't quite work.
That's, the way that I thought, yes, that's it was inappropriate.
But
yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you were with the guys?
Yes.
Is that what we would say now?
Including some people I only see like once every year at this sort of event, friends of friends.
Yeah, so you could do anything. You could say anything. You could do anything.
And we did.
And what did you end up doing?
I ended up singing, along with someone else, the theme tune to Twirly Woos.
Which is...
Great Big Boo and Boogaloo.
I didn't mean for you to sing it. I was asking you what it was, because some people might not know who the Twirly Woos are.
The Twirly Woos is a kids' TV programme.
Played a lot in our house.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know quite how we came to it, but when Blake was watching it today, I suddenly had a flashback to singing the theme tune to the Twirly Woos.
It could have been a lot worse.
Such is life.
You know when you came back and you told me about the barbecue, the food, and then you told me this morning about singing theme tunes. I did breathe a small sigh of relief.
Watching television. Race Across the World back.
Is this the fourth series?
Yes.
I can't remember it because we've had the celebrity version.
It's the fifth if you include the celebrities.
Okay.
It's the fourth
non-peasant. So the premise of Race Across the World is that groups of people, sometimes they're related to each other, sometimes they're friends, and there's two of them, the pairs, have to make their way from one point in the world to another point in the world, and they don't know where they're heading to when they start. Within a period of time, with a small amount of money, and not able to take flights.
Yeah.
Do you think that's
the gimmick is that the budget they have is the price of an airfare, which is obviously it's more expensive to travel via boat and train and everything like that rather than just fly there in a couple of hours. So the first series was going from London all the way to the end of Singapore. The second series was going through South America, Central and South America. The third series was traveling all the way across Canada. Mm-hmm. And this one is travelling from Japan all the way through to Indonesia.
That was very well remembered.
Well, I know these places, so I don't know them very well, but I know of them.
And I think the beauty of this show, and we've talked about it before on the podcast, so if you are new to this series and you find yourself going back and watching the earlier series, go back and have a listen to the episodes where we've covered it, because I think we've covered every single one, including the celebrity version.
Well promoted, yes.
Thank you. The beauty of this that we found in our watching of it has been the people and the way that sort of forcing people into a situation that they wouldn't typically find themselves in, where you've got a limited budget, where you have to get a big map out. You've got no phone, so you can't go on Google Maps and, you know, sort of point yourself in the right direction. You've got to talk to people on the street. You've got to hitch a ride. You're going to have to work at various times so that you can make money back. And you're going to get lost. And you're going to get tired, and you're going to get hungry, and you're going to get angry and frustrated. And the only person who's going to be there with you is your friend or your relative. It's that psychology, isn't it, of sometimes the people who are involved don't know each other very well, even though they might be related. So you might have like a brother and sister pairing, and actually they don't spend very much time together outside of... you know, these sorts of situations.
Yeah, there's been sort of family members where someone's had to leave the family for the family group for whatever reason and has come back in and wants to get to know people. Parents who haven't necessarily been there during kids' childhoods. I think the beauty of this, it's lovely to see the places, but it is the friends we make along the way, cheesily enough, is the joy of this. And yeah, I mean, so this is... I think the challenge with the last two series have been that it's very similar environments. A lot of the Canadian series was just them hitching a ride in the snow. a lot of
getting a taxi.
Yeah, a lot of the central. Let it go. See previous series. and a lot of the South American one is Latin America. You couldn't necessarily see the difference between the countries. Mm. Whereas on the first series, the beauty is if you travel through, you're traveling that distance, you are going through Central Europe, you're going through Eastern Europe, you're going through Western Asia, all of which were very, very different. And absolutely a different show every day.
Cultural references, different languages. Mm. Different weather. It was really fascinating when you were going through multiple countries that had that real separation between them.
Mm.
And I think we're back to that in this series
to a certain
extent. So even though we start off in Japan, and I think the first episode was going down that way where I'm thinking, oh, okay, I think we're still in Japan. I think we're still, you know, we're just moving from one place to another. By the time we got into the second episode, which has just been released, that moved and people were making different choices. So someone was going off to a different island and another person was staying on the same island. So they were really diverting in terms of their groups.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, talking about the contestants, you've got Owen and Alfie who are friends. They have very different ideas. I know that I think one of them really wants to go and see places and stop off. Another one just wants to win.
And I don't think it's just about the winning. I think it's about the structure as well. Yes. Of like, I have been given a task and my task is to get to this checkpoint. I feel...
You sound like you're being seen here.
I resonate very strongly with Alfie when he's like, well, we've just been told to go to this place, so we need to get to this place. Whereas his friend is very much like, well, I've always wanted to see this and I've always wanted to see that. But you get to... I think the thing is, I know you're going to take us through the other people as well, but let's take those two for an example. You get to know them more. So by the second episode, you understand a little bit more why brains are working in that way. Anyway, go on, take us through the rest.
Betty and James, who are brother and sister, claim they don't really know each other, so it's nice to spend time with each other.
They're in
the mid-20s. Eugenie and Isabel, who are mother and daughter, they claim that they have quite a strange relationship at times. So what you tend to do is, as the task goes on, people will talk about these things and have heart-to-hearts on the road, so I'm sure we'll find a bit more about that soon. Bridie and Sharon, mother and daughter. Again, Bridie says quite early on that she's severely dyslexic, so has trouble reading and communicating with those around her. So, yeah, it's an interesting story there.
Yeah, I think for her, what she said was, and I don't think we've seen this before, which I think, again, is really good casting of this series, is because she's got severe dyslexia, she can't read easily. So she has to, in her day-to-day life, even away from this travel program, in her day-to-day life, she has to ask people for their help. And she has brilliant interpersonal skills because she's had to. She's had to create that bond with someone very quickly, because if someone says to her, oh, just go over there and read that map, that's not going to work for her. She needs someone to go, right, come and show me how the ticket machine works, and actually just put with it, you know. And that's what you need on this, because you're going through areas where you don't understand how the transport works, you don't understand the language. So I think they have been really, really interesting to watch from that point of view of how do you connect with people when you don't share a common language, and they find that commonality, which is really, really interesting.
And then Stephen and Viv, who are a retired couple, I think there's been some very interesting editing. They are definitely painting Stephen as quite an annoying character in this.
Yeah, Viv does say at one point that the people are, is it the tennis club?
Yes, I think that's right, yeah.
She says something along the lines of, they can find him quite loud. And he tries to jump in a queue.
Yeah.
And you can sort of see her sort of getting slightly embarrassed. And she says that he says things that don't necessarily... don't necessarily sound great.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It's been some interesting editing. And this is what this journey's about, isn't it? It's about seeing what you can do, you know. And they're saying that they've had health problems, they're later on in life. And I feel, again, like you're positioning with the others, there's going to be this arc, this narrative arc that's going to come out where perhaps he learns a little bit more about, you know, the way that he is, or she yes. learns more about, you know, all of that sort of thing, I think will come out.
But this is absolute appointment television for us. You know, we will stop what we are doing and make sure that we are available at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday. But yeah, if you haven't seen this before, really recommend checking it out. Check the other series out, which I'm sure on iPlayer. And yeah, just let us know what you think, because it's what really is one of our favourite shows. I think it was on my top 10 shows of last year, the celebrity version. So,
I have to say, I found it harder to get into the people this time round, but I don't know whether I have that every year.
I think we say that every year.
Right. Okay, good.
And by Excellent. The end, Consistent. By the end, we are like, oh yeah, these are the best cast ever.
Cast. Yeah. Oh, what we could do next? Fallout.
Fallout.
Fallout. Fabulous. So Fallout is an Amazon Prime release. Everything's up there now. Based on the role player... Is this... You're going to have to tell me if I get this wrong. Role player video game. Is that right? RPG? Role yeah, just play game?
Role play video okay. game. Yes, yes.
Anyway, a video game.
Yes.
Of the same name. Post-apocalyptic drama where some people are in vaults... which are essentially bunkers under the ground.
Silos, you're like you may.
Yeah.
If you were describing a TV show from last year.
And they're living a very sort of liberal, democratic life, aren't they? Where everything's very jolly and everyone has a say
yes.
and everyone has a role. And it's all very 1950s. And then above ground, dealing with the aftermath of the nuclear war, which is now called the Wasteland, so that gives you an idea as to what it looks like. There are various factions, including the Brotherhood of Steel, which are sort of a quasi-religious, quasi-military outfit.
Yeah.
And there are people known as ghouls
yes.
who don't tend to have noses. And I'm not quite sure what's going on there. Mm.
So I've seen the first episode of this. Mm. I know what you think, because I for a week I saw you watching this at every spare opportunity.
It wasn't a week, hon, it was a weekend.
Okay. Okay, yeah, right.
It was a weekend.
I'm going to carry on with this, but it hasn't enticed me in from the first episode.
Okay.
I don't know the games at all. All I'm aware about from the games is the symbol of the blonde guy with the thumbs up that is a recurring a marketing tool for them. But this is one of those shows where there is just a wide number of plot points, a wide number of like plots going on at the same time. We don't necessarily know why we're seeing these people. We are introduced to characters, they have the little thing, and then there's absolutely no relevance to the rest of the show. I felt the very same about Game of Thrones. It took me about 6 series to get into Game of Thrones because I didn't care. I watched it and I was like, well, I don't understand why we're seeing her and this people. And it's just a storytelling method which I find a little bit tiresome now because I think everyone's trying it. I take it you're a fan.
Yeah, sorry. I've written about this on social media, and as Mark's alluded to, I spent an entire weekend watching it sort of in 10-minute, like, what do you call it, like little parts?
Chunks.
Yeah, chunks, where I even like took it into the bathroom with me and stuck it on the loo while I was in the bath because I was like, I just need to watch the next bit of this. And when I went for a bit of a lie down in the afternoon, instead of really lying down, I just went and watched another episode. I found it so compulsive and I just wanted to see what happened next. And because I don't know the games either, I wasn't entirely sure what I was getting into, but I love the aesthetic of the first episode. It's very sort of retro futuristic,
which is in line with the games, I believe.
Absolutely. And I think we should mention that it's executive produced by Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who were behind Westworld, and the first 3 episodes are also directed by Jonathan Nolan. Now there's a huge cast of producers and executive producers, but they've been very much pushed. I heard on the radio the other day, Fallout from the minds behind Westworld, Jonathan Nolan. And I was like, oh, that really annoyed me. They didn't mention Lisa Joy at all. It's just that Nolan name that they wanted to get in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just him. If you look on Wikipedia, you'll see there's just a huge amount of production companies behind this. This is a big production. So, but I loved that. It did remind me of the best of Westworld, sort of the first two series of Westworld for me. And I get what you mean about, you know, you're being introduced to the different characters. And for me, there are certain plot points that hold your attention more than others, particularly in that first episode. I hope you do carry on with it, because it does come together and new characters are introduced and new situations occur. It's very twisty. So if you don't know what's going to happen, you'll be surprised. Things that you think you've got your sort of a handle on, get to the next episode and something will come along and give you some information that you go, oh, right, okay, I sort of presumed that had happened, but no, it's this. Even until the last episode, there were things, you know, lockbox mysteries that needed to be opened and that were, and that you were given information and the information made sense. I really liked it. It reminded me of Lost. It reminded me of Westworld, albeit in a very different context. When, you know, we're not on an island. We're not, you know, pretending to be cowboys. you know, although there's quite a Western spirit to it.
Yes.
Yeah, I get that. But, you know, what I'm saying is it's. I think it's really easy to say, oh, it's this, oh, it's that, when actually the way that it looks and the aesthetic of it is very, very different.
Just to defend whatever the radio thing that you mentioned was, Jonathan Nolan, someone who does, I love our lists of people who do the same job as a family member, but a little bit worse. Like Julian Lennon. Jonathan Nolan is a director of the first three episodes. He's not the writer. He has a produce credit, as does Lisa Joy, but that is an executive producer credit, which suggests that they're not exactly day to day on this.
Yeah.
It's probably just an honorary title based on the fact that
there's just so many people involved. I think it was interesting that's what the marketing is pushing, though, that it's just him. That's what I was just making the point that, you know, it's Nolan and Joy, not just Nolan.
No, but that's the point I'm making. Lisa Joy is an executive producer.
So isn't he?
Yes, but he's director as well. Okay. So executive producer is largely...
Yeah, I know. I get that. But, you know, you're getting the point that I'm making.
Yes, yes, yes.
I loved it. It's 5-star for me, and I've seen the whole thing. I'm very excited that they have announced a second series, which is coming out hopefully soon, so that I can remember everything that's happened. But yeah, I just loved it. And a big shout out for Ella Purnell, who is from Yellow Jackets. And she was one of the girls in Yellow Jackets. She is carrying this show, and she's up against some really big hitters in terms of actors. For example, you've got Walton Goggins, who I have, until this point, called Walter Goggins. the entire time I thought it was called Walter Goggins, but it's not, it's Walton Goggins, like the Waltons. He's, you know, clearly an experienced actor. He's got a big part in this, as has many, many other people that you will know. Kyle MacLachlan being another. Thinking about it off the top of my head, but there's loads of others. And she has to be our audience surrogate. She's in the vault and she's going to go out into the wasteland, so she's taking us through that story. And she is a little naive. She's been in the vault for quite a long time. She's lived this very protected life, but when she comes up into the wasteland, she has to be courageous and strategic. And the word that I used when I was talking about the show was plucky, and plucky can be quite an interesting line to sort of to follow, can't it? Because it can go one of two ways.
Yes.
You can go plucky and annoying, or, you know, plucky and heroic. And she absolutely steps on the plucky and heroic. I really love watching her. I think that's what makes some of the plotting difficult, because you do find yourself just wanting to be with her character and see what she's going to do next. And
I was disappointed when the action moved on to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But I think it does come round in the end. I think it all plot lines converge, and they each have, you know, because you've had that build up with other people, that doesn't mean that they've just thrown in at the end. You have all of that background. Anyway, yeah, I think it's absolutely brilliant.
I'll give it a go. I'll carry it on.
I hope you carry on and let us know what you think.
We've got some films to talk about.
Let's talk about some films. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? When you're hurting with your baby, last row in the balcony. What do you want to do first?
I want to do Immaculate and Civil War, first of all. I'm going to do them quickly.
There's two films I haven't seen.
Yes, and then we're going to talk about Monkey Man, which is a film that we've both seen.
Excellent.
Immaculate, the second film I've seen this year starring Sydney Sweeney.
What was the first one?
Madam Web.
Oh, yes.
This one is better. This is the story of a young girl who moves to Italy to join a convent. She's been handpicked to join. What's the word when you become a nun?
Oh, I wanted to say ordained, but I think that's a priest.
That's a priest.
I should know this from The Sound of Music. When you, oh, I can't even think about it. But yeah, I will know it. As soon as we stop recording, it will come to me.
Yeah. She finds that there are things going on in this convent that aren't quite what they seem. And then, surprisingly, one day finds herself to be pregnant.
Taking your vows. Taking vows to become a nun.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. This is obviously a problem, and the people in the convent are convinced this is a second immaculate conception.
Okay.
Thus, hilarity ensues.
And thus the name.
Yes, yes.
Thus hilarity ensues.
Yes.
Can I just make a guess that hilarity doesn't ensue in this horror flick?
This is I wouldn't call it a horror. I'd call this more a psychological thriller, probably, would be where I'd place it. I mean, there are a lot of tense moments, a lot of jump scares, but it's more just people over people's shoulders and a bit of noise to indicate that you should be scared by this, rather than it actually being very horrific. I was interested in this all the way through. However, I think it's safe to say the final act of this is absolutely batshit crazy and turns that way.
Which is what all of the reviews were saying.
Yes.
And which was, I think, a real draw for this film for you.
Yeah.
It's not one for me because it involves pregnant people.
Yes.
And for all the reasons, it's just not what I'm going to be into to watch. But even I was interested in the fact that everyone was going, wait till you get to the third act.
Yeah.
To the point where when you came home to talk to me about it, I really wanted you to say, right, okay, well, what is this third act and where does it go?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them in hindsight that probably you can see coming. There are things that are, there are lots of Chekhov's plot points that are dropped in amongst the narrative of this. But one thing I will say is that this is the first thing that's not Madam Web that I've seen Sydney Sweeney in, I think. There may be something else that, like, run around somewhere, but yeah. Not seeing Euphoria. And I think that was her big breakout role. And I can't think of anything else that comes to mind. Sydney Sweeney is an absolutely excellent actress. I feel that's not necessarily the way that she's been painted to me up to now. The White Lotus is the other thing that I think she's been in a fair bit. Which, again, is something that I've not seen. And then Anyone But You, I think she had a rom-com earlier this year with Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
There is a scene in this, the final scene of the movie, where she is acting her fucking ass off, really is. There are things in this that will absolutely stay with you. I'm absolutely delighted that I've seen it and also devastated that I've seen it as well.
Okay.
Yeah, it is hard work at times. There are things you will wish you had not seen, but it is a bit of would I call it exploitation? It's, you know, it's sort of things that were common, like The Devils, like, and it's a film that I've not necessarily seen be made in the last few years. Certainly not to this level where it's packing out Cineworld and the audience and the like. I loved it. I loved it. I really did. It's the highest praise, and I'm really interested to see what Sydney Sweeney does next, because she is giving it her all in this. And
well, my understanding is that she was involved in the production, that she...
We've just gone through the joys of production, yeah, haven't we?
But yeah, you know what I mean? I'm going to say it. She was involved in the early doors. She was invited to be involved in it. Then I think either COVID happened or something like that. She went back and said, oh, is that film still like available? Is the script still there? It hadn't been made. And she went, right, I can't stop thinking about this. I want to be involved in it.
Okay. I mean...
So I think she's got some real...
Yeah. Sort of,
it's not just that she's been brought on. It's that she's thought about this for many years.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to her. She's absolute star-making performance for me. I know that, like I say, a lot of people have seen her in Euphoria and White Lotus and things like that, but I am really interested. The thing that I would put it closest to is St. Maud. It's the thing that comes to mind with me around this.
Yeah.
And it's very in that, you know, it starts off at one pace and then it escalates and escalates. Did you ever see St. Maud?
Definitely. Yeah, I understand that sort of the tone.
Yes.
It's a very specific sort of tone.
Yeah, but yeah, highest recommendation if you can catch it when it comes out on VOD or whatever. I was gonna say you'll have a good time. You might not.
You might not. By the sounds of it.
And then Civil War.
Alex Garland.
He's come a long way from writing The Beach, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think we are of that age where whenever someone says his name, that's all I think about. I think about the front cover of that book and I think about reading it. Like, it was one of the first books I really got into, like as on the cusp of adulthood, reading a book that other people were talking about rather than like, you know, Enid Blyton. I really remember that feeling of reading something and then it being made into a film.
Yes. Yeah. So Civil War is the story of a president who is unnamed in this, but has declared that he can serve a third term. Thus, a coalition of the western states of Texas and California have started an insurgency against the president. And this is the story that is told through the war reporters that start off and they decide that they're going to go to Washington, D.C. to try and get an interview with the president before the Western forces arrive and most likely take over the White House. It stars Kirsten Dunst in a really, really strong role for her. I think for a little while, Kirsten Dunst went away from our screens. I liked her in... What was the Lars von Trier film that she was in?
Oh, Melancholia.
Yeah. Mm. I really liked that. That was...
I think she's been around more than you are saying here, because I think she's been in TV stuff that we haven't seen.
Okay. I mean, last thing I have to remember, she was in The Power of the Dog a couple of years ago, but...
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But I was thinking, I'm seeing her in a sort of like western-y type things, but... Yeah, that might be what I'm thinking of. But I think she's been doing good work, but just quietly.
Yes, okay, yeah.
But this is great that she's got this sort of leading role in a film that's getting a lot of marketing. It's on the side of buses, the trailer's on all the time. And obviously her husband's in it as well. Jesse Plemons is in this one.
Wagner Moura is the other, that's probably co-lead, who was in, played Pablo Escobar in Narcos. I've just seen him in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He's in that. And they are joined on the road trip by Stephen McKinley Henderson, who is in... He's in everything. He was in Dune. He was in... What was that thing that... Devs.
See, that was very Garland.
Yes, absolutely.
Was he involved in that?
I think he was,
It feels like him.
And Kaylee Spaney, who I've just seen playing Priscilla They go on a road trip to Washington, D.C., where we are told that they shoot journalists on site. And this is a road trip. This is a road trip film. And we see what is progressing across America as we are driving through it. This has been getting some quite middling reviews that I've heard.
Hey, yeah. I didn't know that.
And part of that I put down to the marketing. I think the marketing presents this as a story of modern American politics as told through the eyes of war reporters.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought this film was, so I'm intrigued by what you're going to say now.
I didn't get that at all. I don't think that is what this film is. I think the modern politics is purely a framing device, and this is looking at the role of war reporters. The whole politics around it is largely irrelevant for a lot of it, which I didn't mind, but it's certainly, I think it's not what a lot of people went in expecting.
No, I've just done a face at you because I found that very intriguing, given the marketing, like you say.
I mean, I found this storytelling incredible and really, really powerful images and discussing what is the role of a war reporter? Why do they put themselves in this dangerous situation? And probably on me, I had absolutely no idea about the situations they put themselves in. And, you know, you are seeing them walking along with the soldiers on raids and things like that. And they ask themselves the questions of why they do these things and why can't they step in? Why aren't they the people asking? Why are the people making this stop or making change happen, and how they feel they contribute to the world? There are some incredibly powerful images in this. There are some incredibly disturbing scenes, as you would imagine in any depiction of war. But I love this film. This will be in my top 10 of the year. I have odd issues here and there with how it's done, but there is some of the most tense interactions that I've seen on film. Jesse Plemons, as you said, turns up for one scene. There are other scenes involving, you know, being in cars and things happening around you, up there with Sicario for tense car scenes. Oh, wow,
okay.
I really, really enjoyed this, and it is absolutely a tough watch. Mm-hmm. Make that very clear, and purposefully so, as it should do. But I got a lot out of this, and I am disappointed to see that other people didn't quite get as much, and I suspect it's down to it was not what they were expecting. Mm. This isn't the attack on Trump's America. And I think the film at certain points goes out the way to, we don't know who we are standing by. I think it's very interesting that they've picked Texas and California as the two states that are marching, because that's a state that I imagine is very left-wing and very right-wing.
That's exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
But we meet soldiers, and the film goes out of its way to say this could be anyone from this. It doesn't really matter who the side is. We are just taking pictures of people shooting each other. I think this is a phenomenal piece of filmmaking. This is probably my favourite Alex Garland film. I'm sad to see that people didn't get out as much of this as I did. But this is a 4.5-star film for me. It was close to 5. It didn't quite hit the emotional notes that I probably would expect from a film when I rank it a 5. But I've got a lot of time for this film.
Fantastic.
Great. Are you interested in seeing it, by the way?
I am. I am more now that you've spoken it about it being an ethical dilemma, because that's the sort of stuff that day to day I look at anyway in my job. So I'm always looking at the ethics of what we do and why we do it.
Mm.
And the ethics of being on the ground during war to report it, I think, is absolutely fascinating. It really reminds me of the Manic Street Preacher song, Kevin Carter, funnily enough, because Kevin Carter was a photojournalist that he took photographs of things that were truly horrific, children who were starving. There was a very famous photograph of a child who was in deep distress and very close to death, and there's a vulture standing nearby.
Yeah.
And that was the famous thing, and he took his own life many years later. And that whole song and the whole thing around Kevin Carter was, you know, how do you live with what you are doing? So if you are there to take a photograph, how do you, you know, why don't you step in? Why haven't you stopped that? Why don't you feed the child? You know, all of this sort of stuff. And it sounds like it's very similar with this, is if you're standing by when people are doing awful things to each other, is there ethically, morally, you know, a drive within you to stop those things from happening, or are you just there to report?
And the only film I can think of that's covered this before, and there must be others, but the only thing I think of is The Killing Fields, which is a film I saw a long time ago, so I can't really compare it, but it's definitely something that I welcome being put into film.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Aye.
On a lighter note.
Talking about the big monkey, man.
It's so great, isn't it? I think if you've ever watched Jules Holland's Hootenanny, Monkey Man, the song comes, it's every year, is it? Not that I've watched it for the past sort of like 6-7 years possibly. But certainly when we were younger and the Hootenanny came on, the woman who sings that song, I cannot remember her name. And is it Ruby something? I want to say Ruby. But anyway,
he had
the same performer on every year, and she sang the song Monkey Man. And that has been the song in my head too when thinking of Dev Patel's directorial debut, Monkey Man. But it's not about Jules Holland, and it's not about people singing. It's about Dev Patel's anonymous young man. I think he's known as Kid in the credits.
Yes.
Anonymous young man who wears a monkey mask to perform in scenes that really reminded me of the Iron Claw at times, and various wrestling, but sort of underground boxing, fighting, martial arts, kickboxing, fights that are going on where people are putting money down. And to begin with, he's getting really, really badly beaten up. He's not particularly very good at defending himself. And Sholto Copley's Tiger, who is the promoter, it's just amazing. He comes in and sort of berates him and says, "Come on, you've got to put on a better performance than that and give the people what they want." And doesn't pay him very much at the beginning, actually. And we follow Dev Patel's character as he finds his way into a high class, is it a hotel or a restaurant or
I think
something
it is
like that, many things.
I think I would say a gentleman's club.
There are other things on the higher floors.
There's certainly bedrooms in there,
taking place, but into this sort of criminal family, which happens to involve one of the police chiefs. And we're not quite sure why he's there, but slowly and surely his tale, his backstory, and what he's trying to achieve is revealed to us.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's fair enough, keeping a lot of things off the table.
It's taken me a long time to actually work that out in my own mind, because you don't want to give too much away with this film.
No, and I went into it knowing absolutely nothing. I only knew that it was a Dev Patel film, so that was literally all I knew from start to finish.
And written, directed, produced by him as well.
Yeah.
So it absolutely is his idea. Now, people have been calling this sort of John Wick in Mumbai, and I'm just not sure if I agree with that. I've only seen the first John Wick film. This has phenomenal action in it. It is an action film, but what I really like about this movie is that there is trauma, there is emotion. It touches on political ideas that I don't think we've seen before. It's clearly relating back to things that have happened and are happening in India.
Yeah.
But in other countries as well. It's not necessarily you have to know the political history of India to follow this. You can really pick out anything. You know, if we talk about marginalized communities, for example, if we look at poverty, if we look at childhood trauma, that can relate to any country. I thought this was absolutely phenomenal and deserves much more than this, oh, it's Dev Patel doing John Wick. I think this goes beyond the glossy action flick. I think it's gruesome. I think it's harrowing at times. I think it takes you down pathways that you absolutely didn't expect to go to. There's spirituality coming through. There's a lot about storytelling and finding your purpose in life. I think this goes beyond those very standard action movies. You're wrinkling your nose. You don't agree with me, do you?
No, I think the Indian John Wick is actually an absolutely appropriate thing to be saying about it, because John Wick is an incredibly successful franchise. And what else are you going to say? Like, yeah,
I understand that, but I think there's more to it.
So I think you're doing John Wick a disservice by that. I think John Wick is a better film by that. I think the problem is, and you've seen the first John Wick, by the fourth John Wick, it is just literally gun spam. And they all have suits which are bulletproof, and therefore there is, you know, it to the point where shooting is basically just irrelevant. And I think I mentioned on the John Wick 4 review last year, why don't you just point up at the head where there's nothing? But yeah.
I think what I liked about this one though, Hun, is that John Wick, he's an assassin, isn't he? And that he's sort of there from the beginning, but here we've really got like an underdog.
Can I finish my point?
Go on.
I think the difference with this is that things have consequences. There is an early action scene which involves one gun, and it's made very clear that this gun is important to everyone who's in that fight, and the people crawling across the floor to get the gun because it is relevant to the ending of the fight. Whoever gets control of this gun it's tracked like a dangerous weapon rather than just something that we can do. There's a similar thing with another weapon later on in the film that is tracked very much the same way. I think I understand what you're saying about the motivations, and I think adding the political elements, it touches upon, like you say, marginalised communities. I have a little bit of knowledge about the discrimination based on religion in India through cricket, basically, because there are Muslim cricketers playing for India that are criticised for their religion. Similarly, there are Hindu cricketers who play for Pakistan at times who are, like, people have not necessarily got the opportunities of a Muslim player. And these are the criticisms that come about. And that's how I know it. So it's not something that I was massively about, but it's something that I've looked at since. I'm a little bit softer on it than you were, Dara, okay. I think, this film. I think it's a solid 4-star film, but just, I have some quite specific criticisms about this, which I feel you are going to say are quite unfair.
Okay.
I feel that Dev Patel, in his direction, really, really wants to get his shit in.
Okay.
And, like, I'm crying on him to just keep the camera on the action for 1 second and keep it steady. Whereas, so I could just watch what's happening rather than have it as a handheld following him. Just put it on a tripod and keep it still for a second.
You're such an old man.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And
it's a style.
I hope he's got that shit out of his system, because I think he's a very, very talented director.
Totally.
I think there are some beautiful shots in this of around, not just, I don't know what city it's actually set in, is it? But I think there are points where we leave that city as during this.
And we go into sort of the countryside.
Yeah. Mm. I really, really enjoyed this film. I don't think it's necessarily top 10 of the year level for me. I suspect that might be the case for you.
Oh, absolutely it is, yeah.
But what a performance from Dev Patel.
Oh,
like,
no. You know what? I was watching him, and there's one point where he puts a suit on, and I thought, Dev Patel for Bond. And I don't think I'm the first person to say that.
No.
And I know that other people might think, oh, actually, you know, why would you want to strap yourself to to be in James Bond. But I would love to see him in a role.
Money, fame.
Like, yeah, exactly. I would love to see him in a role like that and bring everything that he has to bring to that, rather than just going down the same route of like, who are we going to have now? And it's like, oh, is it Idris Elba? Oh, is it, you know, blah. It's just the same people, the names get chucked around the same thing, like James Norton and that sort of stuff. Dev Patel should absolutely be at the top of that list. He can act, he can sing,
kick, he can dance.
He can kick people in the head and use a big machete. What I really liked about this as well was that I love a really strong action movie where you can feel the punches and you have danger around the weapons. So that tick for that. But the other thing I really liked was the humour. There's a scene near the beginning of this film where a character runs towards a... Yep. place that, yes, you would typically think, great, they're gonna, you know, this is gonna be a big thing, they're gonna smash their way through that and it's gonna be a big scene and they're probably gonna fly sort of like Matrix style through the air and land on a rooftop somewhere else, and that absolutely does not happen. And when the thing does occur,
yes,
I just laughed my head off. And there's funny other characters. Dev Patel's character, and I wouldn't call him, I don't really want to call him kid because he is like an adult in it, but anyway, kid, he picks up these people who become his mates, and often really unexpectedly there's a guy that's involved in this high class hotel / restaurant / brothel / whatever called Alfonso, I think his name is.
Yes, yeah.
And at the beginning, like, I think we're led to really hate him. He's a little bit Joe Pesci, is like, oh, do you want to buy some blows type of, you know, thing. And I really took, sorry, I'm in the 1970s.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you can't pull that off.
No, I know. But I'm being Joe Pesci in his, yes, earlier roles. He, you know, he's going around the kitchen bothering him, sort of saying, you want this, you want that. And at the beginning, I thought, God, I hate him. By the end, I'm like, come on, Alfonso. Like, he's like my greatest sort of character. And there are other people who turn up having much more of a much more emotional side and spiritual side. And I really love that. There's a bit later on where things take a pause. Now, I know there's been criticism, because I've listened to all the reviews, there's been criticism that it kind of stops partway through, the action stops, and it becomes sort of, there's a different tone and timbre to the film. I think that added so much more weight to the final scene. If you just have boom, 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 boom all the way through, and oh, here's a quick flashback to a backstory, it doesn't have the payoff. I cried so much during this film, particularly during the later moments and in those spiritual scenes, and all the questions around finding a purpose, but also the people that he's talking to not being seen as part of a community or part of society, and having to hide and then being beaten up. And I just loved all of the things that he was doing. And I love the fact that he just went for it and was like, right, I'm having that, I'm talking about that. He has a lot to say, and I'm really interested to see what he does next.
I'm kind of with the reviews on the middle section. There's a middle section where he finds himself, and I think it needed more. This wasn't the montage, the training montage the training that I was looking for.
Okay. Yeah.
But look, I think this is a great film. I'd recommend it to anyone. I have recommended it to a lot of people. And I think for a first-time director, I think, yeah, Dev Patel has done an excellent piece of work there.
Amazing. Mm. Absolutely amazing. More, please.
Yes. Right. I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Honeymoon Pod. And if you'd like to leave us a review, that'd be much appreciated. See you next time.
See you next time.